This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 219, Kurtzman's Five-Year Mission. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Larry Nemechek. We'll be talking about some of the recent news surrounding the franchise, including award nominations and wins for Discovery, the shakeup among that show's producers and writers, the possible return of Patrick Stewart, and Alex Kurtzman's new deal with CBS, what it could mean for the studio's plans to greatly expand Star Trek, and whether they should. But before all that, we take time to look back at Harlan Ellison and his contributions to Star Trek and the genre. So let's step into the Ready Room. Well, hello, Larry. What are you still doing in my Ready Room? The last time we recorded was, February? I came in here to dust things off, and there you are on the sofa.
Wait, Chris, is that you? What? How many... Chronometer, how many star dates have elapsed since we recorded? Oh, my God. Well, I'm sure nothing... You know what? When I fell asleep, everything was calm and peaceful in Trekland. So I know, it's probably just still a boring landscape out there, right? I'll just make my way home. I'm sorry. Sorry I overslept.
Nothing has happened at all. But Larry, looking across the room at my desk, I see that big banner. Portal 47, you've been using my Ready Room as the set for your Portal 47 videos?
Yeah. Okay, so, there's a double whammy here, because obviously, yes, I did, and yes, I recorded about 4,700 of them all at once, and have been doling them out while I was asleep, so.
I see. That's what's been going on. Good thing.
Don't tell anybody.
Scheduling.
It makes you kind of look fake. Either that or a huge prophet, a forsooth seer.
Well, it's good that we're both back here in the Ready Room anyway, and we're going to do a little bit of catching up. You're going to catch me up on what's happening with Discovery, and also...
Oh, don't lay all that on me. It's more than one mortal man can keep up with. I know that.
Well, we'll work our way through the rumor mill a little bit. But before we do that, Larry, we lost a very big name in the Star Trek world over the past few weeks. On June 28th, Harlan Ellison passed away, of course, the writer of The City on the Edge of Forever, what many consider to be the greatest hour in all of Star Trek. And we all know Harlan had a very colorful history as a person, of course, with Gene Roddenberry, his relationship with Star Trek and such. But nevertheless, it is a wonderful story. And it is sad to see us lose Harlan Ellison. Did you ever have any encounters with him or any chance to talk to him over the years?
I didn't. Yes, I can tell you I had three encounters with him, but never like a formal sit-down interview.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Harlan was like, in fact, somebody mentioned that Harlan may be one of the last of the great old sci-fi writers, like the towering iconic giants, mm-hmm. like Bradbury and Heinlein and on down the line, but from the 50s and 60s era, 70s.
Yeah.
What's funny is, he would speak a lot. I was in Oklahoma, right, Chris? And I don't know if you know about this, but I grew up like thinking I would never ever see anything that happened in LA or New York. So all through even the 70s, even the Worldcons or the Trek conventions where he deigned to set foot, I was never going to see him at one of those. But lo and behold, when I was working at my paper in Norman, Oklahoma, he was actually scheduled by some organization on campus, not at OU in Norman, but at Oklahoma State in Stillwater, up in Aggieland. And my city editor and I drove up to Stillwater to hear him talk one night. And there were about 12 people in the audience, which was pathetic. It was a small room. It wasn't a huge room. And he just, you know, but that didn't faze him. He didn't make any cracks about how small the crowd was. And he just let – I just remember – I can't remember anything about the night. I think I got – he signed my ticket. That's all I, you know, I did. I forgot my original printing of his version of Sitting on the Edge of Forever, which was the only way you could get it for decades was in a paperback reprint of some other stories from other authors. But that and then he was at Star Trek Las Vegas just a couple of years ago when that graphic version of City came out, of his version, right, with Trooper, the dark version that Gene and Gene Kuhn heavily rewrote.
You're talking about the IDW.
Right. And the thing, and the reason why the schism between them for all those years, and they argued, which I always thought karmically was great because they both won an award, right? which I thought was kind of interesting. But, like the Hugo, you know, went to the aired version, as you would expect. And then his won a Writers Guild. He submitted on its own, even though it wasn't the produced version, and it won an award there. But he was signing at Vegas. I talked to him. He, you know, obviously just 3 or 4 years ago, he's very frail and old. And I remember thinking at the time, this is amazing that he's here, but I bet it will be, you know, the last, not to be morbid. But the time I remember best was during the strike about 10, 12 years ago, the writer's strike, and when they were having theme days. And after Ron Moore did a Galactica theme day at Universal, that gang got together and had a Star Trek day, and everybody who had ever written for a Star Trek, any incarnation, was invited to come picket in front of the Paramount gates. And of course, it wasn't at Paramount. It was, you know, all the studios. So that was a picket site place. And a lot of the actors joined in. A lot of directors and other people joined in. And they were working on the first J.J. movie, and Bob Orsi and Alex Kurtzman even came out and walked picket line, you know. And it was great because it was like watching a class, like an all-school reunion, and all these different writers from different eras were there and talking to each other. And a lot of people had nothing to do with Star Trek, but they were friends of Trek people or whatever. And some of us were there. You know, like I have my one credit, so I was entitled. I was an associate member, so I was entitled to pick it, plus cover it, obviously. And there was Harlan. Harlan with a really sarcastic sign. The guy who was head of the Producers Guild, Nick, forget his name. He had a big sign that said Nick sleeps with the fishes, you know, in the old mobster sense. Yeah. And he was walking around. He wasn't just like picketing on a thing. He didn't have a stick on his sign. So he was like walking around holding it above his head, and then he would rest for a little bit, and then he would walk around holding it above his head. And, you know, but he was just one of, you know, 200 people out there that day. It was awesome. And I talked to him for just really briefly. But yeah, unfortunately, those are my great Harlan. You know, other people interviewed him a lot more, and people that worked with him back in the time. But you couldn't be a Star Trek fan coming up through the 70s and the 80s without knowing your Harlan story and what happened on City and the Great Divide.
Very true. You mentioned earlier that he was perhaps one of the last of the great science fiction writers from the era of the 50s and 60s in particular. One person you did not mention was Isaac Asimov.
Right. And yes, I knew I wasn't going to get them all.
Of course, you're not going to get them all, but I bring his name up because I was reading the New York Times obituary for Harlan Ellison, which was written by Richard Sandomir. It's a really good obituary. He goes into a lot of things, and he has a quote in there which he pulled out of Isaac Asimov's autobiography, I, Asimov. And in there, Asimov was talking about Harlan Ellison, and he called him one of the best writers in the world. But he also pointed out that he felt that Ellison was too often sidetracked by his furies, as he called them. And he said, Asimov said, it is simply terrible that he should be constantly embroiled in matters which really have nothing to do with his writing and which slow him down tragically. Now, of course, it's not for us to comment on whether Harlan should have been concerned about things or not, but it's interesting to see the words from a fellow SF great viewing the situation as a writer and imagining perhaps what Harlan Ellison might have accomplished if he had been even more focused on his writing. So I just found that interesting that that's something that Asimov had said.
Yeah, yeah, distractions. And, you know, I mean, that was Harlan. Harlan could, you know, he was as good or better a ranter, mm-hmm. you know, not ranter like crazy guy in the parking lot or something, but I mean, like on stage, he could rant for two hours and people would pay tickets for that. And that's what led to that long running bit that they finally bury the hatchet, he and Gene, over city, to the point where yes, he came around. But you know, like anybody in licensing, things didn't happen with city for years and years and years because Harlan was so prickly. And a lot of the deals with the original series, a lot of the things from the original series 60s contracts were done differently, and they dealt with writers and they dealt with, you know, different creatives differently than where people could have a stake. You know, by the time of the Next Gen and now modern TV, think that those contracts are more ironclad, leaning towards studio rights and, you know, producer rights. But Harlan had retained a lot of rights around city. And the other thing, Harlan was very, I don't want to say litigious, but he would stand up and scream for his own sake, but he would also stand up and scream for writers in general and not being screwed, right? Like everybody getting all the attention except the writer is the one forgotten. It's kind of like the keyboard guy.
Yeah.
So he was always looking out for his own interests, but also for writers, both you know, novelists and screenwriters. And all of those missions, he always had a soapbox. The City Saga was a prime one. But, I mean, another thing, you can see this on YouTube. Harlan in his prime, there's a very famous episode of the old Tom Snyder Tomorrow Show, which used to follow Tonight Show, Johnny Carson on NBC. And it's so 70s because he's sitting there smoking and they just had a black set because it would be on at midnight, right? And there was a show from 75, 76 that I remember because I didn't see it live, but I saw the rerun later. And it's Jimmy Doohan and D. Kelly and Walter Koenig and Al Schuster, who ran it's like the only male guy in the top committee of the original New York Star Trek conventions. And then he later on split off. He was more the business and dealer end of it. But those three and he, and maybe some more, but they did have Harlan as a guest. And it was amazing to watch that now. And go back and watch it now because he's there. You know, and it's a talk show, but it's the days when they would be a little more opinionated and they're not just there pushing a book or a movie. They're there to be actually talking. And I don't know what was going on that possessed them to have, for them to schedule this Star Trek night. But they're all talking and just talking about the fan movement is still amazing and new, and they can even talk about how, you know, like, I can't pay my rent, but these people think we're gods and that kind of thing. And at the same time, Harlan would talk about that and going to cons and talk about fans and how they're both wonderful and crazy. And then he does this pivot and talks about how, you know, well, while you guys are worshiping Star Trek, let me tell you about what, like, how it didn't. It so betrayed its potential. And he's sitting there after they've been in this love fest. He gets off on not a supreme rant, but he starts trashing Trek for what it didn't aspire, what it didn't get to, you know, where he was enthused in the beginning, and what, you know, he would get off probably talking about how they wound up selling beer and dog food and had to make their numbers and couldn't really get radical and couldn't really get controversial. And But that was Harlan. But that's out there. Anybody can catch that on YouTube, the Tomorrow Show spot. The whole show is amazing. But there's young Harlan in his prime, the way as a kid I remember him being, and almost the way I saw him. You know, that was only about 10 years before I saw him live myself. But I just want to mention real quick something I was involved with, and I probably mentioned a couple years ago. I was one of about probably 30 people that got to do a voice book. There's a company called Skyboat Media that does audiobooks and audio productions. And Harlan partnered with them at the very end of his life he wrote a book about the city on the edge of forever, about the whole saga, the writing, the split versions, and all the years, like the next 20 years when they argued back and forth in print and other writers and other Hollywood people would talk about the saga, and then he would like counter that and say they didn't know what they were talking about and they had it wrong, and then about burying the hatchet. And it's got that, plus there is a full cast version of his original script with the Mind Crystals and Trooper, the veteran, the World War One veteran. And it's just amazing. And LeVar Burton is a voice behind it. He is the, I think he's the narrator. But Harlan himself is the voice of Trooper. It's the one where supposedly it looks like Scotty is dealing drugs, which wasn't quite true, but that's what right. Gene always said. And they've just got an all-star cast of people. Gene Smart, Stephen Rudnicki, J. Paul Bomer, who was on Voyager GS9 and Enterprise. David Gerald does an essay. Dorothy Fontana does an essay at the end, and they do voices. And I got to do a little audio essay at the end, and I think I have two lines as the transporter chief who gets killed at the transporter. But yeah, there's a whole lineup of people in it. And it's Skyboat Media. You can go over to their site and check it. Maybe we can run the link. And it didn't get as heralded as I thought at the time. It was right about the same time as the IDW, and it was done in time for the 50th anniversary. And it kind of got overshadowed. There was a Kickstarter fund to help it, but this company does this professionally all the time. They're kind of a boutique company that do a lot of really cool audiobooks of things. And so anybody that's really interested in this, I would suggest go over and trying it out and hear me die. but hear a lot of people, just hearing that first, some people would say, I've heard you die before, Larry, on stage.
I was picturing you as a Tellarite down on the floor in the episode. Like, you're really good at this dying in Star Trek thing.
I was going to say, I thought you meant in this version of City. Like, it was...
No, not in this. And what, in Continues?
It was the secret first appearance of Tellarites way before, Journey to Babel. No, but just throwing that out there. It didn't get a lot of attention, so maybe we can get some. There's some reprinted afterwards. There's one from D. Kelly, too, as well. And Peter David and Leonard and George Takei and Melinda Snodgrass. So there's a lot of Trek people, a lot of people in this. And again, it's his WGA-winning original version that was heavily rewritten to make it more Star Trek. Because his version would never have aired, the old saga. It was just unproducible. And there's even a famous Bob Justman memo. All part of the Harlan saga. And I, when I recorded this, they told me they were close to him at Skyboat Media, and they told me that his health was not good. And it was after he had been at Vegas, and then 3 or 4 months later, they told me that he was, pretty much bedridden soon after that, which made me think about how you couldn't stay, there's a time when you can't be morbid. And I just had a feeling, and then, later I was confirmed, but I almost wanted to stand up and scream at people at that Vegas and say, 2015, I think maybe, and say, get over and talk to Harlan. Like, this is, you're not going to have this chance again,
Yeah. It's one thing when I saw the news that reminded me that, I've been doing this for 7.5 years, and I never had the opportunity to arrange an interview with him, but I have had the opportunity to talk to many other people, David Gerald, another famous writer who I've talked to a number of times. And one of the reasons why I started doing this and why I started the network was for us to talk to these people and get their stories before they passed away. And then here's a case where, of course, we weren't able to. So
we reach, brother.
That thought certainly crossed my mind.
Yes. So RIP, Harlan.
Yeah. So before we move on from this topic, Harlan turned 84 in May. He had suffered a stroke in October of 2014 and also had heart surgery. So, of course, things had been going downhill for a while. His wife let everyone know that he had passed away on June 28th. He died in his sleep. It's recorded as natural causes. No one knows exactly what happened as far as I know, but we're sad to lose him. He was one of the great writers in science fiction. And of course, we'll always have not only The City on the Edge of Forever, but also all of his other great work to remember him by.
Demon with a Glass Hand, for one.
So let's go on to the next topic, Larry. We're going to talk about Discovery now for... pretty much. Well, Discovery and the future of Star Trek, I guess, might be a good way to encompass everything that we may touch on here. But let's start off with Discovery's wins and nominations for awards, because this stuff is in full swing.
Right.
And the series, for all the criticism of the series that you see if you're involved in social media,
Oh, Chris, that'll get you in trouble. Lay off that social media.
The reality is Discovery has received 15 nominations and so far 3 wins from a whole range of awards. Most recently, we learned that Discovery has received 2 nominations for the Emmy Awards, one for Outstanding Prosthetic Makeup for a series, a limited series, movie, or special, specifically for the episode Will You Take My Hand? And the other nomination is for Outstanding Sound Editing for a Comedy or Drama, 1 hour, for What's Past is Prologue. And for the overall franchise, now this brings Star Trek's total Emmy nominations to 157, and the franchise has won 34 of those. So I think a pretty good track record for that mostly syndicated space franchise that no one really wants to take so seriously.
And now it's out there where nobody can find it because it's not on real TV.
That's right. Which reminds me, actually, I'm just going to jump ahead because you said that, Larry. If we scroll down to the Saturn Awards, maybe this did not actually make it into my notes here, but I remember reading that the category had to do with new media.
Right. They had a best television series. They had a best series on television. And they had a best series, New Media.
New Media, yeah. And so now,
yes.
Streaming is taking hold.
Talk about the ultimate compromise. They gave the Saturn Award voters gave the best new series television to The Orville, and they gave the best new series, New Media, to Discovery. So it's almost like they kept all the natives from being too restless over that.
Larry, just hold on just a second, Larry. I have my social media hat over here. Let me put it on for a minute. So you're saying that both fake Star Trek and real Star Trek won awards. And of course, by real Star Trek, I am talking about the Orville, Larry. Okay, let me take my social media hat off and let's continue on with the Ready Room.
I see what you did there, even over the audio waves there, Chris. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, sticking with the Saturns, Larry, those were given by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films. And as we just mentioned, we did get Best New Media Television Series for Discovery. Also, Sonequa Martin-Green won the Saturn for Best Actress on Television. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, Discovery was nominated for Best Actor on Television. That was Jason Isaacs. Best Supporting Actor on Television, Doug Jones. And Best Guest Performance in a Television Series by Michelle Yeoh. And I have to say, personally, I'm really disappointed that Doug Jones did not win because I have been so thoroughly impressed with him as Saru. I just think it's phenomenal what he's done on the show.
Yeah, and under the prosthetics.
Well, that's one of the big reasons.
Yeah. And you think, you know, when we think about, I mean, I don't know of anybody but maybe the Cardassians and Odo. And not even Odo, because at least that was quasi-humanoid. But, Saru is... Doug is working with so many layers of prosthetics there. You know, like you think, well, Michael, I mean, talking about the alien observer of humanity character. And that's kind of what Saru is in this crew. As we also got, it's the interest of his race and his species and getting to know them. And, you know, Spock was that in the original series with pointed ears and bangs. And then we had, you know, Michael Dorn, the Klingon, and in his, but his Klingoniness is still a pain, but you can still see Michael's face there. And then, and then even Rene Auberjonois and Odo's prosthetics were all over, but you could kind of see Rene in there as far as regulars. And no one really in the, Neelix, not really. He was the most made up in Voyager and no one in Enterprise. So Doug's got, for that fulfilling that role, small R role in the ensemble of a Trek show. He's the one he's dealing with more prosthetics as a regular than anyone has ever in Trek that I'm thinking of as a regular. Yeah. So, and what he's done is amazing and made it so sympathetic and made people want to, like Spock did way back in the beginning, made people want to know more about, you know, all things Kelpian and at the same time. So,
yeah. I mean, I think the only other person that might have a bit of a tougher time expressing through their makeup would be, you know, the character that wears the virtual reality battle helmet. But
yes.
Yeah.
Well, you mean the one that died on the Shinsu?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Not so they Arium, didn't have much of a chance to express themselves, but even so, yeah.
All of that bridge crew, I mean, they've just announced more guests for some more of the leads for Star Trek Vegas this year, STLV, the creation show, and the big one.
Yeah.
But they'd already had a lot of the quiet. The producers were promising, and those poor actors. It's hard when you're some of those folks who are, Arium and I'm going to mess up their names. But all the bridge crew that we've seen, the guys too, the guys are like at the back, but along the sides. But that whole bridge crew of Discovery that's through Mirror and out of Mirror, whatever, Shenzhou survivors or not, they've had so little to do. It's like, oh, they got a lot. What happened? They got to say something. And they promised to give them a little bit beefier roles. They've got a basic background for all of them. But, there's a little personnel file of six or eight lines. Mm-hmm. They promised to give them a little bit beefier characters. But a lot of them are going to be at Vegas. So that's going to be interesting. Don't know why I got off on that tangent. But
because they're including them, it's
yes
they're giving all these people an opportunity to get in front of the fans and probably give them more to do as the series goes on, so that would be great. All right, well let's move on through the awards. So those are the Saturn's Costume Designers Guild Awards, nominated for the CDG Award for Outstanding Sci-Fi Fantasy Television Series.
Mm-hmm.
Also the Empire Awards in the UK. They won the Empire Awards Best Actor in a TV Series. That went to Jason Isaac, who, of course, surprised fans by using his own accent in the Mirror Universe. And people thought, well, maybe that's an homage to Scotty. But no, that's actually Jason's real voice.
I think that broke a long generational divide, I think. I think
maybe.
Anybody older than Harry Potter thought it was an homage to Jimmy Doohan, and anybody younger than the Harry Potter saga knew exactly what was going on there. So,
and that's what we call the HP line.
That's right,
Harry Potter line. Yes. Yeah.
Nothing to do with computers or Lovecraft. That's what it's a whole new meaning. Yes.
Yeah. Also in the GLAAD Media Awards, we talked about this, I think, last time here on the Ready Room, Outstanding Drama Series nomination. The Hugo Awards, the nomination for Best Dramatic Presentation Short Form for the episode Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. And I'm glad actually to see that episode get some recognition from the Hugos, because it's another episode where I know some fans were not crazy about it. They thought maybe it was a little bit silly and a little bit out of place, and why is Harry Mudd there? And hey, it's a cause and effect ripoff. But I thought it was a great episode, and I thought that it held together really well. I thought the storytelling style was really nice, and it also had the flavor of disco, literally.
Yes.
In the episode. And I thought it was a defining moment, actually, for the first season.
I did too.
Now, there's also a Peabody Award. It turns out that Discovery was one of 15 Peabody nominees, but did not win the award. And the honor was for most compelling and empowering stories released in electronic media in 2017, which takes us back to the Saturns in a way, where they had the new media category. Here, the Peabodys are also talking about electronic media. I guess viewing CBS All Access as a streaming service as being something certainly distinct from the traditional broadcasting networks.
Well, and that may not be just splitting hairs or trying to spread more prizes around. That may be a recognition of the same way with premium channels like HBO, when you had Game of Thrones and Sopranos and what they can do. There are certain things you can't do on a broadcast. So maybe it is inherently unfair to compare the more adult, the more budget-minded aspects of production of those shows with what's on a network.
Yeah.
So it's probably a more fair way to do it besides just spreading the wealth around a little more, the PR around more people.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so. Let's see. We have a couple more here. We have Publicist Guild of America. They nominated Discovery for the Maxwell Weinberg Award for Television. And then the Visual Effects Society Awards nominated Discovery for the Outstanding Visual Effects in a Photoreal Episode for The Vulcan Hello.
Mm.
I guess my question is, what is a photoreal episode as opposed to
as opposed to purely a more way out, more fantasy aspects. You know, there's aliens and spaceships, but it's still grounded with a reality versus, a fluidity.
Yeah.
A complete wacky doodle crazy. Wacky doodle, that's Maury Hurley's term. I was seeding well, that in.
They still had water and sand in that episode, so.
Yes.
There you go.
That's how grounded it was, right? Literally.
Right. All right. And then the last one here, the Young Artist Award. They nominated Discovery for Best Performance in a TV Series for Recurring Young Actress. And this was for... This nomination went to Arista Arhin, who plays young Michael Burnham in those scenes where she's a child on Vulcan and she's doing her training. So I thought that was kind of cool.
That's interesting. Right, right.
So that's the rundown so far. As I said, Discovery has taken home 3 awards. That's 15 nominations. And I'm sure there will be some more to come. I'm curious to see what happens with the Emmys.
Right. Well, speaking of the Emmys, and maybe this is a pivot place, maybe, but, CBS went all out to promote Discovery. They were promoting in all the categories. They were, all those nominations on the Saturns, plus like all the creative areas. They were really pushing nominations, costume and makeup and probably sound and editing and visual effects, and a lot of the cast and all the different, categories that there are, regulars and guest roles. And I know on one hand, there was disappointment that they didn't come away with more nominations, but at the same time, they're right there in the saddle of, right in the sweet spot of where the last 30 years of Star Trek has been, as far as claiming a lot of technical nominations and awards. And,
right.
We look back now and say, how the hell did Patrick Stewart or Brent Spiner, among everybody else, at least among all the great actors, not come away with at least a nomination, much less a win? And a lot of people kind of look back at that now and regret that. But you're also dealing with the prejudices of, syndication and science fiction in the 90s that were around at the time. But
right. Because don't you think today, if The Next Generation were on television today, don't you think Patrick Stewart would probably get a nomination?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like, oh, we didn't know he was going to be an icon. We didn't know he would be in a wheelchair and be on, satisfy a whole different other franchise.
But forget that. I mean, forget that now he's an icon. But if you take The Next Generation back to, say, like the 4th or 5th season of TNG, if it were happening, it's just the attitude towards not only syndication, but science fiction at the time.
Well, right.
Well, such that they weren't recognized.
Rick Berman always famously said that Next Gen was sci-fi and syndicated and a sequel. Like it was the triple, the triple whammy of S there against Next Gen from being considered seriously in the Emmy mindset. And of course, that was before Emmy nominations went to HBO, much less Emmy nominations went to Netflix, right?
Netflix.
So,
yeah.
Which, before it was invented. So, right, the paradigm, the perspective, and it all has so greatly changed in the Emmys. It would be a totally different landscape now if we could somehow merge those two.
Well, I'm waiting for you to break new ground with the Emmys, Larry, with your nominations for Portal 47 for Best Facebook Shorts Videos.
Done from a sofa in the ready room.
Yeah, released on Tuesdays.
All at once.
It's a very specific category.
Unless it's after midnight. Oh, okay. When you went to, Tuesdays. Except after midnight. Yeah, when it's dark. And then you get a shrunk. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, let's move on from the awards and let's talk about what's going on with Discovery right now, because as we're between seasons, there's been a lot of turmoil, a lot of upheaval, a lot of things that could make some people think that, oh, there's so many problems with Discovery. What's happening? But then make other people think, well, Star Trek is blossoming now. What's going on? We're going to be getting a lot more Star Trek. Maybe we're even going to be getting Riker, a Star Trek story, coming up. If they do a bunch of little films about Star Trek characters, who knows in this expansion that might be coming our way.
Riker before the beard. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's what they were going to call it. And then someone said, why don't we just call it a Star Trek story?
A Star Trek story. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, The first bit of big news, I suppose, and following up after what you're talking about, where All Access went all out to get Emmy nominations, executive producers Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts were then let go. So they're now gone. And this I read from the Hollywood Reporter. I don't really know what's going on, but in this report it said, Berg and Harberts became increasingly abusive to the Discovery writing staff, with the latter said to have leaned across the writer's room table while shouting an expletive at a member of the show's staff. Multiple writers are said to have been uncomfortable working on the series and had threatened to file a complaint with Human Resources or quit the series altogether before informing Kurtzman of the issues surrounding Berg and Harberts. After hearing rumors of HR complaints, Harberts is said to have threatened the staff to keep concerns with the production an internal matter. Have you heard anything like that? Is this just some reporter who got some back channel news, or is this a real thing? What have you heard?
Here's the thing about this entire saga. For one thing, you're focusing on this. They started shooting, you know, like late last winter. Again, they're up to their fifth or sixth. Wait, what was it? They were on their fifth episode, all of this broke. So they're into the season. Anytime, you know, for Michael Piller to come into the third season of Next Gen when things were so wobbly and take it over, and it was crazed way back then. So a changeover, on one hand, it's almost unprecedented because no one wants to go there if they can help it, right? No one wants a mid-season explosion like that, meltdown. But at the same time, we can get into this in a minute, it may not be that severe. So, but it is surprising and amazing. The other level of this is, it's surprising and amazing. A, this broke with Hollywood Reporter. They were claiming it as an exclusive. And just to step back a minute, this is the first chapter, opening salvo, of about, you know, four, five, six parts that just blew up after we'd already gotten used to, okay, they're shooting, there's a PR blackout, all the actors and writers and producers are going to be cute and coy with their little Instagram and Twitter pictures. And, you know, oh, here's Marina going to see Jonathan when he directs. And, here's Patrick saying, I'm going to have, you know, all the little cute, coy stuff. Like, we're just in for that for another 8, 9, 12 months, aside from when they go to an award show or a convention, right? And out of the blue of that, you know, you're lulled to sleep, aside from your little Twitter feed, then this blows up. And this is like the opening salvo. Within another week, they're gone. And then Alex Kurtzman's taking over. And then Alex Kurtzman gets a huge, apparently leveraged this, good on him, into a huge development deal. You know, hey, I will step in and be your Rick Berman or your Michael Piller. I will save this new, you know, franchise phase three or whatever for you. And then they've hired the new showrunner. And then aside from that, all the things that come out as sources are all about these other projects that are going on at the same time in development under Kurtzman's production company. So you had this like explosion where this was amazingly, you know, this blew the world up. And then it was just bang, 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 rapid fire over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks. The other level here is how CBS and CBS All Access reacted to it. They jumped out. It was not like horrible, horrible rumor. I mean, obviously, the way press and news works, whether it's Washington, D.C. or Hollywood, which I know of no other places that work this way. But, you know, when someone has got enough on a byline story here, this Leslie Goldberg, Hollywood Reporter, claimed that you don't go with this and you don't put that much detail in unless you've got sources. What was amazing is within hours of this, you had the same thing at Variety, the same thing at Deadline. They weren't just copying Hollywood Reporter. It's like the sources were out there, which either meant everybody was talking about this with the right ear, or this was going to happen. It had happened. And without coming out and making the corporate press release, right, they had a spokesman talking from CBS. So they were on top of it. And so they were trying to, you know, they were doing damage control. They were trying to put the best spin on it they could. But even then, they were very... You know, we see these stories that go from they've been let go. Here's what's happening. Alex Kurtzman is show running. Stay tuned for more. You've got that level that's officially released. Then you may have, you know, CBS on the side said X, and then you may have even deeper sources say. And all of these, you know, vaunted, traditional, respectable. This is not Fred Smith blog. This is not you know, the famous Starfleet Intelligence blog that mm-hmm. reports on my every move, apparently wrong.
The guy but, in the know, back of the room, Starfleet yeah, Intelligence.
Yeah, the guy in the back of the room in Phoenix. but, you know, these are all reputable media going to, like, a CBS person on the side, and then the next tier of information is other sources said. They're talking about the details of why they were let go, and then as we get into here in a minute, Alex's New Deal and what's going on there, which just blew, you know, the internet up in a whole different way. Oh my God, they're talking about four or five different projects, you know, all across the board for Trek, which made a lot of people excited. Which was weird because it happened at the same time that Star Wars and its direction and its fan base, or at least its, you know, loud, what I used to call loud 10%, they're all seem like they're eating each other alive over there with turmoil. And here's Star Trek. You know, it's not like they've planned this as a secret evil plan to expand Star Trek at Star Wars' expense. But the timing was kind of, you know, just the way they're ebbing and flowing yin-yang here is kind of been interesting, too. But when you have this many media, respectable media outlets talking about all the same things, then that kind of leads credence to, mm-hmm. you know, to the whole ball of wax.
It's an interesting turn of events for sure. And it makes me wonder what was happening towards the end of the first season in the writer's room and how that might have impacted anything that made it to screen in terms of the storytelling.
Yeah. But, well, and one other thing here, this bit about going, there's a kind of a reverse side to this too. And I may have heard a couple of flickers about this, that obviously there were issues here, but a few people have pointed out going over budget. I mean, you know, let's backtrack a second. Gretchen and Aaron, Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts, were hired on staff by Brian Fuller originally. And mm-hmm. then when Brian left, of the four, five, six people around at the time, or they were brought in and wound up being showrunners when he left. So they were the fix. They were the plan B go-to rescuers, right, when Brian left. And they put out a whole season. And you know, we all know the crazy, tortured process that went through from start to finish. It was a long time getting from there to here with that first mm-hmm. season of Discovery, but it wound up in a much better place at the end, I think most people agree, than it started out as, or at least as, you know, there's a plan, and then there's also how you're making your plan happen. And yeah. it seemed like both of those had settled in by the end of the season. And now, and I have been saying, you know, let's see what they do with a clean slate. Let's see what they do with no drama. And then this happened, but they weren't fly by night rookies. They had been around. So other people say, "Gosh, showrunners yelling at writers in the writers' room? Like, oh gosh, that never happens." I mean, you know, maybe you'd like it. Maybe that's not typical, but that's hardly something outlandishly crazy. And people going over budget with budgets. I mean, Alex Kurtzman directed the first episode, so you know, not totally in charge of the prep budget, but. Mm-hmm. So some people have said maybe some of these things, there's something else going on, or they're there for a reason. You know, maybe it's not as drastic as it sounds. But on the other hand, something happened for them to you know, five shows in, talking about they had a planned break. Well, it was a planned break around here, but they took it after the fifth now to retool, mm-hmm. You know, and check staffing. Nope. But maybe you know, it had to be something big enough to do this. Have it be this public, and then mm-hmm. have CBS be on top of rank of at the same time as, you know, trying to wrangle it and manage the PR damage and fallout, but at the yeah. same time be fairly upfront about it.
Well, I think you have to be these days, especially in the United States. If something like this happens, you can't really brush it under the rug. You can't really sit back and like hope it goes away.
Oh, no.
You have to be very proactive and jump on top of it. Now, just to be clear, when you talk about going over budget, you're talking about in the second season, right? Because
right, yes, yes.
The first episode of the second season has reportedly gone way over budget, and they're anticipating that the budget for subsequent episodes will have to be scaled back. Now, that's not necessarily unusual either for a Star Trek series, is it? If you look at
DS9,
or you look at Voyager.
Exactly, exactly.
For pilots, I'm talking about, like, you have this big...
Well, the DS9 pilot famously went way over budget. Right,
right.
And they blame that as crippling the rest of the season and making it feel confined, and that's why they opened mm-hmm. with that three-part, you know, the series yeah. with on Bajor. just for second.
So season. This is not an unusual thing to happen either.
Not really, not really. But then we, you know, it's hard to have sources say writers wanted to go to HR or quit.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to put that out. And no one has refused. The other thing, same thing in politics. This was all out there. No one came out and said, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. That's fake news. No one refuted any of what these sources say, reporting from Hollywood Reporter or from Variety or any of the other sources. So, and again, the Hollywood Reporter reporter, here, is the one that claimed it as an exclusive and broke the, Leslie Goldberg broke the ice. Although within hours, everybody was, all the major trades were reporting this. And then all the major media that had an entertainment section. So again, it wasn't fly by night reporting.
Does Starfleet Intelligence have an entertainment section?
I don't think they have an LA bureau.
I mean, that goes beyond, you know, Starfleet matters, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, the holographic studio on, I don't know, on Ferenginar, producing Vulcan Priestess or whatever Quark right. had in his collection.
So I guess the big news coming out of this is that now Kurtzman is executive producer, inked a big new five-year deal. I call it Kurtzman's five-year mission with CBS. It was announced on June 19th. It's an extension of the deal they had with him, but it's going to run through 2023, reportedly worth about $25 million. And now CBS gets exclusive rights to produce all the television content that's created by his company, Secret Hideout. But more interestingly for us, the press release said that he will supervise the expansion of Star Trek on television. And there's also those rumors that there are two Star Trek films in production right now, or in development, I guess I should say, is probably a better word. Whether one of them is Riker or a Star Trek story, I don't know. But
right.
What are your thoughts on, I mean, Kurtzman being more involved, Kurtzman being the guy running things is not a surprise, but this idea of expanding the Star Trek universe, what do you think about this?
Well, and again, there's two or three things at play here. Number one, the minute that Aaron and Gretchen are out story, they immediately, it was like, don't worry, we're not in total chaos. That's not what they said, but the implication was, you know, there was an immediate line right on the heels of that in the same paragraph. Alex Kurtzman will assume, you know, full showrunner duties, right? Oversee the writers. It was a lot the same way when they first announced the show that there would be a new Star Trek on CBS All Access. Remember? No title, no format, no nothing. All you knew was it was going to be Star Trek. They were going to have, we didn't know the number of episodes even. It would be a new Star Trek, and Alex Kurtzman was the one name attached to it. So, you know, he has been there from the beginning. But again, it's one of those things of, we have to have a name to reassure folks. But when that
and at
broke,
the time, we didn't know if it would be Prime or Kelvin
either.
Yeah. And with his name being attached, people really speculated.
Right. And that was November. And then it was not until a few drips came out, but it really wasn't until the big Comic-Con press conference in July that we found out Prime and, well, they hired Brian. And then it wasn't until in the spring, February, March, whatever, or announced it at least. And it was not until well after that that we found out Prime and 13 episodes, later 15 and all of that. But my point is, to me, Alex Kurtzman is a lot like the Dick Wolf, apparently, of this. And this contract really confirms it. He's overseeing development, which means he's not going to bogged down is not the, he's not going to get involved in the day-to-day running of a single show now. He's been around the block. He's cut his teeth. And when he and Bob Orsi were partners, they've been there, done that, right? He's at a stage in his career and his life, and he's kind of been handed this opportunity, you know, silver lining here out of chaos, a little bit the way maybe you would say Rick Berman got handed the silver platter at the right place at the right time. Gene glommed onto him. Eddie Milkus pulled out, and then Bob Justman pulled back and retired, and Rick became the go-to guy, and he built an empire over 18 years. And you could say that same kind of, that's just the way life is, right? And the right people, the right. And a lot of fans go, oh, Alex, Kelvin, Empire and Universe, and we didn't like the movies and all that. But I heard somebody say, well, you know, Alex is, I always had Alex introduced to me as a huge, huge, big Next Gen fan, where Bob Orsi was the original series guy through all the iterations. And people kind of, under, you know, murmurs of, my gosh, Alex Kurtzman is 10 times the old Star Trek fan that Aaron and Gretchen was. Not that that should, you know, Nick Meyer was not a Trek fan when he sat down to write, you know, Save Wrath of Khan script.
And perhaps it was a good thing he wasn't.
Yes. Sometimes you need that out. You know, sometimes you need the outside view. And Rick Berman, you know, was the one outsider in the initial gang that Gene, you know, pulled back together that had that outside view. And that's kind of why I think Gene went to him. He's like, there will always be the Star Trek people. I need somebody around that has a little bit of outside eye. But that initial, they're out, here's who's in. My gut feeling, I didn't have anything to go on, but I just thought that, I said, Alex is a Dick Wolf guy. He wants to pick a showrunner, sit down with them, create the format, the story, the cast list, you know, the basic concept of the show, get it up and running with them, then step back and then turn over here. That's how he, you know, to put it in a retail sense or whatever, that's how he makes his money. He'll get his cut. He'll be the go-to guy. And as long as he hires good people and as they launch these things, and he, you know, it doesn't hurt that he's in forever in residuals as the created by guy and shares that billing, then that's income down the line for future, provided they're good shows, they work out, they're, you know, they're popular, they don't bomb. So he's got a vested interest in doing that. And behind him, as the years go by, he will be, of all these seedlings he's putting out there now, those folks will come along and become the Jerry Taylors and the Michael Pillars and the Ira Bears, like the next step, right? Except this is threatening to become, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 times bigger than even what we saw with the Trek franchise, you know, in the 90s, right? So to me, then the succeeding news that they had hired showrunner James Duff, who'd worked on The Closer and a couple other shows, created The Closer and created Major Crimes, worked on a lot of shows, and even as a freelancer sold a script to Enterprise earlier in his career, that was kind of the other shoe dropping. That it was like, I knew Alex Kurtzman was not going to be the hands-on showrunner. He's got bigger fish to fry developing new shows. And so the first shoe that dropped, besides my gut feeling, was that story, look, here's what else is going on. And it wasn't even sources, Chris. The press release quote that they quote says, He will be developing animation and limited series and all of that, right? The sources got onto the details, but the press release from the network said expanding Star Trek for television, the franchise for television, new series, miniseries, and other content opportunities, including animation.
So for those wondering, real quick, so James Duff, you mentioned his Enterprise script. He wrote the episode Fortunate Son.
Right.
Just for those who are wondering which one it is. And this thing here about expanding, so I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Larry. They put that in the press release. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to do it. It could be that, you know, the studio is thinking like, well, maybe because Disney is going crazy expanding Star Wars, maybe we need to do the same thing.
It's exactly.
Like, tell me if this sounds familiar, Larry. You know, that Star Wars movie is a big hit. What kind of property do we have lying around here that maybe we could do something with?
Yeah, talk about your time travel. Well, I would like to think, since the geeks won and we're in the Big Bang generation and they're watching, you know, Paramount and or CBS are watching Disney and, you know, the Marvel and the DC universes and Harry Potter and everything explode, that they got a clue. Which is what, you know, we've been talking about, what I've been talking about for the ever since Discovery came along and finally premiered. There's 3 or 4 things going on here. One, we all were waiting to see what happened, and it happened, and we all knew it, and they knew it, and we knew they knew it about CBS All Access. And okay, subscribe for Discovery. And then people dropped it because what else is there to watch? I'm not a big fan of The Good Life, whatever. Or another iteration of Survivor. There was a lot of pressure on CBS All Access to put a lot more original content.
What if they did a Star Trek-themed Survivor, Larry?
Oh, God, Chris. Don't put these ideas out there.
You know, it rains a lot on Survivor. So what if they dumped everyone on Ferenginar? They're on Ferenginar for 39 days. They're out in a village somewhere. It rains all the time. Eating bugs is considered normal.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, if you throw these things out in the ether like this, you know, they're talking about taking seed. Yeah,
and today you're competing for profit. It works perfectly.
When this idea slingshots around the sun and comes back to smack us all in the face,
All right.
Profit. It's all in the profit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. But that vacuum was there, and it was almost like the minute Discovery was renewed for season two, I'm like, okay, it's on. It's like, as long as they don't futz this up, then because CBS All Access is chomping at the bit to, among all the other shows they're creating, including Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone remake. There's one that's debuted now that's kind of like a modern sci-fi take. They're chomping at the bit to have a Star Trek in that mix. What this release says is they're even bigger. Their eyes are wider than that. Like, the sources again, right? The sources for Variety list out these four ideas in various states of development here. Some of them have names attached, which again lets you know they would never attach this Starfleet Academy idea. They're mentioning Stephanie Savage and Josh Schwartz that did Runaways for Marvel, for Hulu, worked on Gossip Girl, did the reboot of Dynasty. And I will add also, I interviewed Stephanie Savage for the Emmy magazine because she did Real Space. She produced the Astronaut Wives Club about the original Mercury astronauts and their wives, focusing on their wives. And then the Gemini 12 wives that came along later. So the names are out there from a source. That indicates it's pretty far along. And then these other ones, you know, maybe an animated, The Wrath of Khan that we've heard about from Nick Meyer. And then a fourth one that we don't know, but we know it's there and it's fourth. At the same time, the Hollywood Reporter had started the rumor bill about Patrick definitely coming back in some fashion. And maybe those overlap. But it just, the Academy would be perfect for the CW, right? Hopefully it won't go all, we used to talk about the Academy 90210 idea and people would
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about the Academy thing for decades now.
Since Harv, and even before that one of the early things NBC threw at Gene in the early 70s when they were floating ideas was maybe doing an Academy show then, with kind of the same attitude as UPN having a band of the week in the mess hall on Enterprise, kind of that right. that mentality. But this shows that these all can't be just for All Access, right?
Right.
Yes, CBS is really, they're really cranking it up here. And then the other wacky thing is we watched all the talk, and maybe this is when you were in your cave, Chris, all the talk that blew up about the CBS, I say Paramount, it's actually National Amusements, the Redstones. It's the Redstones and Les Moonves, the remerger or not. And it all blew up, and now it apparently what was sailing along seems like not, or maybe they're in court over it, or it's gone underground again. But whether or not they were looking at having a unified franchise again, or this is CBS going, well, you know what? If we're never going to get back on the big screen and have a say in that with this, then let's get out and, you know, develop the hell out of what we can on the quote unquote small screen. So all those things are in flux right now. And it's kind of it's an amazing time. And it's amazing that we got this much detail again, just bang, 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 bang. And whether this was in the works. Apparently, look, these were all in the works. My first blush was to think that Alex Kurtzman jumping in and getting this deal was kind of his own silver lining, being he and his manager, you know, agent, being very savvy about jumping into a crisis moment there and saying, okay, guys, if you want me to jump in and right the ship here real fast, let's do a deal. But some of these things sound like they've been on the, well, we know the Wrath of Khan miniseries from Nick Meyer has been on the vine for like a year or close to a year.
Right. Yeah.
So these things have been percolating along for a while. The fact that they're so matured along and coming with this news, this uproar, a little bit of chaos here, and now an attempt to smooth the waters. And maybe someone decided to go, maybe someone in PR and social media at CBS is savvy enough now to go, why don't we blow up our fan base in a good way? Right. Instead of showing them controversial Klingons on a leaked Instagram picture, you know, 2 years ago, let's take this herd and you know, let's spin it in our direction and make people, you know, crazy excited. And then you've got the Patrick rumors on top of all that. So, which don't appear to be rumors because, again, they're coming from LA and from the UK.
Yeah.
That Patrick would be back as Picard again.
Well, let's talk about that in a moment. That's actually the last big item that we have on our outline. Before we get to that, though, I am curious if what happened with Solo, A Star Wars Story, will have any impact on the thinking of CBS in terms of this, like, content explosion of new series, miniseries, other content opportunities, animated series, possibly four films. You know, what's happening there? The fact that Disney is looking at Solo and thinking, like, maybe we need to rethink this massive expansion of the Star Wars universe in light of the box office of Solo. Could CBS look at that in the coming weeks and months and think, well, maybe we're grabbing it too much here. Maybe we should scale this back a little bit and, like, focus a bit more.
Well,
I don't know. I'm just wondering.
I have a take on this. What's scary is the last year or two or three. You know, I don't have an MBA. I didn't go to USC Film School. I know the Trek world.
You are a doctor.
Yeah. And someday
someone's
going to trace those credentials, but I've got them, you know, hidden away in a force field protected. But my gut feeling used to be, I thought I had good instincts, but it took people 5 or 10 or 15 years to figure out, you know, like back when I was saying whether the first JJ movie is good or bad, people will wake up and eventually realize it's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that hit people after all the, you know, all the internet meltdown over the show itself, the movie itself, and the choices and the format happened. I think people went, oh, and it took a while, but we finally got back around to thinking that, and sometimes you just have to let time go by, right? You have to let the stature limitations go by, but it came around to that. And it's amazing to me how Star Trek pioneered all this. Then went fallow, probably because of the divorce, the Viacom divorce. And yes, mm-hmm. Disney and Marvel and DC and all these guys stepped into the breach. And, oh, the multi-cinematic universe and the multi-platform universes. Star Trek has always been the most equipped with the most, you know, Star Trek canon is not on trading cards and comic books. It's all those 400 plus hours that's on film that people can go back and point to over 53, you know, friggin' years. So 54 mm-hmm. now, whatever. But it makes total sense, but you're comparing CBS and Disney. They're coming at it from Disney blew this up, and they're coming at it from the angle of if they're going to retool, they've already been there. CBS mm-hmm. is coming at this. I feel like we've been in it. You know, what have we said for years that we're in the fallow years? We're wandering in the desert, right? I think
just CBS, like the Vulcan hello. You're bringing it all back around there.
Yes. I love that opening. It was like, oh, they're taking my metaphor and using it for the opening there.
So what you're saying is that with this deal with Kurtzman, CBS is about to take those final steps to close the delta so that the Shenzhou can come down and rescue us all from the fallow times. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's it, Chris. You got me figured out. Yeah. No, it's really scary to think that there was a time I used to say, like, the time when everybody closed ranks against Bad Robot, thinking that the new movies had blown all old Star Trek away and that they shouldn't even be out, you know, making merchandise and they shouldn't be available to scan anymore to watch, you know, which was crazy. And suddenly the fan interest and the corporate CBS interest were, like, completely aligned, right? Mm-hmm. Where all we grew up with, you know, fans railing against Paramount, you know, the stupid corporate Paramount, they don't know what they're doing. And it was a time when that was in total alignment. And I feel like this is a time when we're back in that. I think CBS, who's trying to make money for their stockholders, but also use the franchise well, and maybe frustration over how the movie side is playing out. And it's like, well, this is what we can control. And the fan interest, even though, you know, a chunk of fandom is upset about Discovery for one way or the other, or for having to pay all access. But I feel like the way this has unfolded just in the last month here with all these headlines breaking, you know, capped by this, climaxed by all this. Oh, we didn't tell you that there's actually four or five things. It's like it is a, it's a whipsaw. It's like a huge secret, but also a huge reaction to all these years of having no Trek, thinking that, you know, the market's hungry. People are hungry for this. And that Discovery, and even with some of the controversies, whether that's, you know, manufactured or amplified by social media beyond what the reality is. But even with that, thinking that there's still plenty of room, there's still a big hungry belly for Star Trek. And that these are not going to be the same way that we're looking at Disney. You know, there are people that will argue that Solo wasn't really, you know, that was the leading edge of the, you know, the whiny fanboy movement, whatever. And that a lot of people enjoyed Solo. And if they retool anything, maybe they'll not have a competing, you know, big picture format. Maybe they'll do small screen. Maybe they'll do more limited, whatever. There's all kinds of ways to go at it. And they can they've done animated already. They can go back and do that again. I thought maybe there's an animated in the works too. But that's all new. This is all new, quote unquote, to CBS. So they're taking their baby steps with Trek. So on one way, no, I don't think we can compare Trek and Wars right now.
But that does tie into to my question, which was because for CBS it is new. For Disney, they've done it and now they're assessing, how did this work for us over the past however many years it's been? CBS might look at that and go, okay, well, Disney did this with Star Wars, and then this is what happened. So should we be careful in oversaturating the market with Star Trek content?
Oh, well, of course, of course you could. Yeah, and, you know, back in the day, when they spun off Voyager and Enterprise, Rick Berman said, let's not make too many trips to the well. And that, you know, that profit motive of a network is going, no, no, go, go, go. Look how hot we are. And everybody, politics, Hollywood notoriously ride a, you know, ride a winning horse until it collapses, right? The golden goose gets, you know.
I never really bought into that as being the real cause for why Star Trek disappeared for so long. I mean, yeah, ratings were declining, but there are a lot of reasons why ratings were declining, some of which were simply the way ratings were recorded in the first place as television consumption was changing. The changing of the guard at UPN, the programming direction of that network had a huge impact on what happened to Enterprise. It wasn't the writing, it wasn't the acting, it wasn't the production value of that show in any way. I'm just curious, you know, what the real appetite is out there for all of this rapid expansion of Star Trek might be.
And the other, you know, what's amazing, even more than the firing, hiring, you know, a couple of weeks before this, this one, you know, it was just a little press release about his deal with CBS and the fact that he would oversee this. What got fandom and the internet all in a tizzy is all of this fairly articulated, like I said, detailed, sourced background, the backup, what we're talking about right now. All these ideas out there is what really blew the lid off people's excitement and discussion level. But the other thing is, these are in development. That's no guarantee that they will be made, that they'll get green lit, that they won't make a pilot and it blows up, that one or at least one of these things has as troubled, you know, a development history as Discovery did, only this time all the eggs were in the basket of Discovery, right? It was out there. It was public. It had to happen because it wasn't just a Star Trek and a Star Trek rebirth, but it was this whole All Access was counting on this to launch with. Yeah. Now you've got other, you know, you've got Star Trek out there. One of these, you know, no one's going to stand by for a year and a half and keep throwing money at one of these if something happens creatively. And you know, it's a good thing. You'd rather pull the plug on a Star Trek than have it get out there and go, oh my, you know, that's the thing about a movie. A movie is a one shot. And if it launches and it's not that great, it's out there. A series, it's like it's slapping you in the face week after week, you know, week after week. If it's, oh my God, how did this, you know, what happened here? What happened here? And if it's salvageable, if it was still exciting because you're so hungry, you know, I'm looking at you, first year Next Generation or whatever, you know, then people stick with it and they make it better. It's like, I see so much potential. Let's just stick with it and keep tweaking. But the idea is that maybe they're throwing so many ideas out, not with the expectation that they will all be out there and, oh, we just, you know, we burned everyone out. And in 1 year, we burned everybody out. No, with the expectation of you've got to put more things in prep because maybe not all of them will survive.
Hmm. Yeah.
Including this fourth one that we have no details about.
I hear that one's really troubled, Larry. There's a lot of uncertainty about that project.
They're having trouble finding their identity.
Yeah. So let's talk about Patrick Stewart, because obviously this has a lot of fans really excited. Now, I'm in the camp of, I like to remember Picard as we got him up through Nemesis, and then the Next Generation was Sunset, and we moved on. I'm not one of those fans who wants to see those characters come back just because I love the characters. You know, I'm a huge Deep Space Nine fan. Obviously, I co-host The Orb with Matthew Rushing. I don't want to see a DS9 movie made today. I don't want to see the DS9 characters come back or those actors come back because for me, what they created was very special and they closed the book on it. And we have that to enjoy forever.
It's what you left behind.
It's what I left behind, yeah. And I don't want to see that come back. So I'm not one of those fans who's always like, oh my God, if we could just have, you know, if Avery Brooks could come back from the Prophets and they made him an admiral of prophecy or something. I don't want to see that. But fans are very excited. Many fans are about the possibility of Patrick Stewart coming back, although he's now 77. And he would have to find a way for Picard, especially for it to work for me, they would have to find a way for Picard to fit naturally into a story that they're going to put him into. And so I have seen three possible paths for this. One is, and by see, I don't mean my ideas. I mean, I've seen in media, Picard could appear in the Tarantino Star Trek movie. Picard could appear on Discovery, or they could reboot The Next Generation, and Patrick Stewart might be part of that. Now, do you think any of those?
Oh, I have even more, but well, okay. This is the rumor mill again. This Patrick and something like number one.
Well, something is going on.
Something
apparently.
Is going on, right? He was cute on social media. People noticed at the time, and like I said, we're getting rumblings out of L.A. and the U.K. both. UK, The Guardian and the Mirror, I think. So that's happening. And even on top of your ideas there, here's the two things that hit me first. Yes, obviously, he's 77. He's not going to do the daily grind of a series and be a captain. Reuniting the next gen crew will be as artificial. You know, remember what we went through with the original cast. Okay, number one, there was you were talking about DS9. A third of the motion picture was getting the crew back together, right? Because you had to do that. But any kind of, you know, movie after a long gap from the original format of a show has to be about getting the gang back together, even if it's not an Ocean's 8 or 9 or 10, 11 movie, or 12 or 13.
Ocean's 47.
But so, yes, that would be crazy. Yeah, because you've set, you know, Riker and Troy off on the Titan. You've got everybody going off and doing their thing. It'll be as artificial as always figuring out why Worf is back with the crew, right, in First Contact and Nemesis. And, you know, right? It would be as that only times eight, right? Plus, they are, sadly, all older. Now, I'm talking series here. That's a big grind. What I originally thought was in the works here maybe was – and again, I step back and look at the meta of all this. Look at the reporting. I thought it was really interesting how Variety had their four sources, had their very specific, again, from producer names attached to one of the ideas down through another one that we kind of knew about already to, an animation, and then the fourth one, whatever that is. And then at the same time over here, Hollywood Reporter's sidebar to the next layer of sourcing on just the Alex Kurtzman has signed his $25 billion deal with CBS to develop all kinds of things. And their second tier in their story was Patrick Stewart in something. Mm-hmm. And everybody immediately took that as five different things, five different projects. Well, what if whoever was doling out these leaks, what if this smacks of a very corporately designed plan here, okay? And what if to get the maximum power and what if to get the maximum exclusivity to reporters, because this is the way media works, right? the Patrick thing is a Patrick angle to one of these other ideas of the four, which brings me to, what if, to avoid the derision of O Academy 90210 with young kids, what if the anchor point of this is Picard is the Academy superintendent or commandant? I hope they go with the superintendent. That was one idea. Another one is, it would be very easy, is maybe you do an animated and you use, because since when they're all older, and you just have everybody back and doing their voices in an animation. And then you could do the years of the show, which I hope they wouldn't do. What I would love to do is see them do a mini series, maybe. And maybe that is the excuse for reuniting his old crew, but they're not going to come back and sit around in their chairs 24/7 for, you know, 26 or even 13 episodes for a season.
No.
It's something special, like a one last crazy, goofy, almost like the plot of All Good Things. If you did something like, not derivative of that, but if you did a thing where they're all on a caper together and some of them are out of Starfleet, some of them are in Starfleet, and, you know, they're all having to risk different things. That's the one time I could see doing a reunion movie. And, you know, the Titan is involved or the ship after the Titan or whatever the heck you want to do. Or maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's Patrick and it's one or two. It's not a whole cast thing. It's just a lot of new characters and Picard's in the mix of that. And it's a very limited series thing. Or maybe that's the plot of an animated series. I mean, but you see what I'm saying? Maybe that idea with Patrick's thing overlaps this. Now, I'm not sure about Patrick on the movie side would be a whole totally different, obviously, a Paramount and Bad Robot bit. And whether that's Tarantino's idea or not, this is another topic for us when we get to it. But I was hoping that Tarantino would be a totally different format and would blaze a trail of risk and creativity here, not have any original characters. Have original characters, not repeat characters. But yeah, but the first two things I thought of were Patrick as maybe the Academy head or maybe some kind of an animation, you know, some or all of them, and or maybe of a third one that we never mentioned.
Of these, well, the animated one obviously would work, and they could actually probably get everyone to come
and
back.
Remember
and
remember ages and him primarily.
Yeah, but in terms of live action, the idea of him being the head of the Academy, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So I could see them possibly doing that. I don't think anyone is taking the reboot of The Next Generation as they're going to get the original cast back together and make a new TV show. I think some people might be taking it as recasting the characters. But I don't know how you do that, really, because The Next Generation, you know, we saw everyone joining together with the launch of the ship, and then we saw them leave. So it's not like TOS where you've got all this time where, like, something happened and we don't
know.
You
had vague roots that were never depicted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't have that with TNG, so I don't really see how they do a reboot, but
as opposed to the original series, you had 3 years, vague roots, lots of gaps, lots of questions. Next Gen, 7 years, you know, 26 a year, except for the 1 year, short strike year. I mean, you had so much of it there. What would you, that's, you know, even the talk about, after the Kelvin, you know, original series crew and the Kelvin, in the Kelvin universe, let's do the Kelvin universe version of The Next Generation. I'm like, no, like, why? What's the point? It's like even more pointless than, well, I'll say. It's like, what's the point?
It's even more pointless.
Yes.
What are you saying, Larry?
Can we have more planets? No. Can we have Bolius 9 blow up? Can we have, you know, like, so, that will change something? I mean, it's like, and now Mr. Mott is one of only 7 Bolians left? I mean, what are you, What's the point?
That's why he has to cut hair for other races, because there are only 6 other Bolians. And they don't have hair.
And they don't have hair. Unless they're a female cadet. Unless she was wearing a wig.
There's always one outlier. Larry.
Cadet Harrow. You're the outlier, right? Anyway.
Cadet Harrow.
Pulled that one out of my back pocket. How about that? You're welcome.
Well, what I like about the Discovery rumor, and maybe I have missed a bunch of news with everything that's been going on in my life, but I watched the video where he was asked the question about Discovery, and I had seen a lot of news items being written based on his response to this question in this video, where someone asked him, you know, have you seen Star Trek Discovery? What do you think about that? And Larry, I want to make sure that you're sitting down. I'm going to tell you what he said. And just be prepared.
Okay.
He said, no, I haven't, but I may have good course to look at it very soon. Now, I want you to run to your keyboard and write a story about how Patrick Stewart is going to appear in season 2 of Star Trek Discovery.
Right.
I mean, the thing, look, you know, I'm a journalist. It's my job. I am the editor-in-chief of a business magazine, and I have to do this stuff all the time, every day. To hear a line like that and then assume that that means that he's going to appear in Star Trek Discovery is just the biggest leap that you can make. But that's what I've been seeing in so many stories. Now, tell me, has there been more that I have missed that connects him with Star Trek Discovery and what role, in what capacity he might appear on this show that takes place 100 years before The Next Generation?
Thank the prophets. There's nothing that I know.
Okay.
Because I had those same questions. He would be, what a waste. What would you do? Unless you had him being a forebear Picard, like from the Picard family album and all the gap, you know, the Picards in the middle between, you know, between the 90s and his own time. Like what a waste to use Patrick Stewart as just some random, you know, it's like having Robin Curtis come back and be random Romulan terrorist in Gambit. I mean, only times 100. Right. Yeah. Or times 1,000. I mean, it would be that kind of thing.
But could it be that he is going to come in and direct? That would be a reason for him to take a closer look at Discovery.
That
would tie in more with something that he might do, just as Frakes and others have done.
Yeah. But then, I don't know if you saw this, but Robin McNeil was being very loving, but being very honest and talking about how he would love to direct on Discovery, but they only have 13 slots and they've put a very big push in. And he says, like, I direct, but I also hire directors on the shows and I'm in the same boat. I'm trying to do this too. They're madly, the shows of conscience are madly trying to make up for women directors, for direct people of color. So, you know, minorities, ethnic groups. And Jonathan's already directed one, maybe two this year. And Alex Kurtzman did the first one. So there's three of their, and they were talking about a couple more who might be directing. Several slots of their 13 are already taken. So, you know, here's Robbie talking. So what, do you think of 77-year-old directors as a protected, an underrepresented director's class? And you...
No, but you know, so as we were talking about the studio looking at maximum impact, they're trying to broaden the franchise, get more attention, increase the profitability of the franchise. Apart from William Shatner, Patrick Stewart is the name, I think, that people would latch on to.
I totally agree. I just think having him direct would be, having him direct would be a complete waste of that energy, that potential to do that in a crass level of getting the bang for the buck out of his name being attached to it. So, yeah. But, so if they had him... You know, and then the other thing is, okay, they do have holography. They don't have holodeck, you know, imaging and all that. So what, there would be an actual time vortex where they bring, if it's Picard, it would be older Picard. It wouldn't be, you know, unless they're going to pull some CGI magic on him, the way they've talked about doing, you know.
We know that spore drive, it malfunctions sometimes.
Sometimes you jump
to places and maybe even times that you didn't expect.
That spore drive has quite a head on it at times. I mean, yeah, but of all the things, you know, so how do you get, you know, an older Picard into their time era? Well, there's all kinds of convolutions. Time travel, you CG him younger. But that just all seems like a waste. It just seems like a waste to me. I didn't even hear much about, of all the Picard going somewhere doing something in Trek, the one about Discovery... You're talking about people writing those stories. There's been no real rumor other than everybody writing that Rima stories off of his one tone of voice as he said that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What he could mean is Discovery is the only Star Trek on the air that is watchable currently. No, not counting movies, and that's Paramount. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about small screen. So to me, his intention was, I might as well watch Discovery to see how the young kids are doing things these days, because I may be doing something of my own and I want to get up. You know, that's what I took it as, not literally. That's the only thing. If there were three other shows, then if he said Discovery, then I would go, oh, it's something Discovery. But that's all there is for him to, you know, do his homework on and catch up, as if Captain Picard needs to catch up with anything.
Well, that's the thing, right? If he's becoming involved in the Star Trek franchise in some capacity, he would naturally need to get up to speed on everything that's being done right now, which would include watching Discovery.
Right. It could well, just it's, be you know, that. Storytelling. You know, and he's, you know, he's done features, but he's mainly, aside from doing, you know, when he's come back and reprised X-Men, the last 5-10 years, he's mainly done stage work, right? He's certainly not done any small screen events. He's done, he kind of came back and did Professor X again, but mainly what he's done is small scale pieces. So if he feels like he has a need to get up to speed on, you know, the trends in modern TV, storytelling, directing, framing, you know, the whole thing, cinematic television.
I think you just hit on it, Larry. I think you just figured out what's going on. They're doing a live action adaptation of that Star Trek X-Men crossover comic from a few years ago. He's coming back, but not as Picard. It's Professor X.
Damn it, Chris, did I let it slip that easy? Boy, my head's going to be rolling now.
I tell you, okay. They are not going to trust us with any of this confidential information anymore, Larry.
There goes my panels at Vegas.
At least our record of letting this stuff leak on the Ready Room is intact, Larry. It is
I know. Okay, fine. I'll send the email to Starfleet Intelligence if they're not paying attention.
What do you mean? They're over there in the back of the room.
Oh, there he is.
Did you see him?
Right, in the very back, in the corner, in the back of the room.
Yeah.
And not saying a word, which is what the guy did the first time.
Well, I think we've gone about as far. I mean, we can keep speculating forever, but I think we've covered enough of this.
But one way you're right. It's amazing. But then that's the internet, and that's the clickbaity kids, you know, like all wanting something out of that, taking it and running with it. And then the incestuous nature of the internet, one person does it, then 47 people can do it, right? And have it on their side. And it is insane. That's why I draw such a distinction there with what Variety and Hollywood Reporter and the legitimate sites were doing with all that other. That's like, this is a totally different, you know, universe, and this is serious.
Yeah,
and I think betrays a little bit of CBS playing that for the maximum, you know, the maximum drip and click value on all across all media, which I think they got. I think they got their cup full.
I mean, it is very likely, and I'm not saying this is happening. I don't know. It is very likely that someone at CBS is intentionally feeding information to Variety and the Hollywood Reporter and others to get this out, because that's what happens. I mean, you look at Apple, you read stuff in the Wall Street Journal about Apple products, that's usually Apple's PR department letting them know what little bit of information they like to get out there. You know, that's just how these things work. And so it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case here. But again, I don't know. Maybe not. But it does seem that something's going on. But anyway, as a fan, I'm excited that there's a lot of new life being breathed into Star Trek.
Yeah. Well, and again, some of the most interesting, tantalizing things about Patrick were not coming from LA, coming from the UK. The Independent here is running a byline source story, looking at some of those. Well, actually, they're quoting Hollywood Reporter, but saying that Kurtzman and Akiva Goldsman, who is not with second season of Discovery, are talking about it being a Picard show, which we were just talking about. But then another one here, The Mirror, talking about leaning toward it maybe being animation. So again, you've got to see if rumor mill's going on out there. But anyway, some of them thinking they're secure enough to jump out with something. Of course, only one of them. We think only one of them can be right. Maybe if there's two Patrick projects.
The one about it being a puppet show, I'm not buying that one at all.
Marionettes or hen. that's the bit. Yeah, Kabuki would be. Yeah, the shadow play.
Oh God, Star Trek Kabuki. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, Larry, it's been fun talking about Discovery and all of these things today, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm. Meta Trex.
You can see Gene Roddenberry playing with the idea of what we could become given our full potential. And the aliens that have achieved that, looking down and kind of criticizing or examining or evaluating humanity from a moral standpoint, almost like Q does in putting humanity on trial. There's a sense in which humanity is being judged by these morally superior aliens that are genuinely pacifist.
Or in the case of Q, genuinely narcissistic.
The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
He's not trying to be a Starfleet officer. He doesn't care about doing that in the context of, well, because I want to prove that I'm a Starfleet officer. But I think that, and again, this is what perhaps in hindsight, after the fact, he starts to realize that who he is aligns itself or can align itself with what Starfleet stands for.
To the journey!
I was wondering why they didn't do a mind meld at the end of the episode.
Why would they do that?
Because Tressa has 90 some odd years, 94 or 96 years of life experience, and Tuvok is a Vulcan, so he can mind meld. Why wouldn't he do that?
Because there's no reason to do that. You're just going around mind-melding with people willy-nilly just because they're old and you want their knowledge? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, it's like space genealogy.
Dude, boundaries.
Melodic Trex.
And, you know, I talked to the producers when I first did the show, and the first thing they had me do was take a combination of the dun-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, Sandy Courage, wonderful horn theme, and Jerry's da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, his theme for the first movie, and make a theme out of those and combine them. So I did it electronically, and they said, good enough. And I said, look, this is not my specialty. And they said, never mind, you got it. So 18 years later, you know, that was it.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us everywhere you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, you'll of course find us in Apple Podcasts and in iTunes on your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app. Just check us out there to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review if you have a moment. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows pretty much anywhere you get podcasts: Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, most third-party apps, and also most of our shows are now in Spotify. And of course, you can stream and download the MP3 files directly from our website. Every episode of every podcast has its own page on our website. So when we refer to the show notes, we're talking about that page. So go check us out over there. Larry, we're heading into convention season, so you've got to have a lot of stuff going on.
Sorry, I was just groaning.
Tell me where you're going to be here as the summer heats up.
I'm kidding. I'm groaning with happiness. No, this is going to be, I was just thinking how, you know, we had the 50th year, which we thought was huge, and then the Discovery preview year at Vegas, Trek Vegas, was huge. And now I think the entire cast and half the creatives and the, you know, the caterer's dog are all going to be at Vegas this year. But we're recording this. I'm on the verge of heading off for San Diego Comic-Con, which is up until the 50th had nothing really of substance for Trek. There was the announcement cast year for the first JJ movie. And other than that, you know, the glory years of Star Trek, the Berman era, all preceded the Hall H, you know, craziness of Comic-Con. But they're going to get it big time this year there. But everything at Trekland Blog, my blog at LarryNemechek.com. I have a lot going on. We have my own solo Trekland panel on Sunday, but I have a podcast panel that includes from Trek FM, local podcasters. So we've got Roddenberry podcast people, John Champion and Ken Ray, that's here on the Trek FM master feed representing Mission Log, and I'm representing the Trek Files and all my guest times here. But Aaron Harvey from his Saturday Morning Trek and his work on The Edge is there too. And some more of our friends are on a panel on Friday, which is the big CBS, you know, Discovery Day. But yeah, lots of stuff for Comic-Con is on my blog now, and then Vegas in 2 weeks, supposing that I survive San Diego, is just 2 weeks after that. And then I have a library tour around Greater Detroit, 3 nights in the middle of August, like the 14th, 15th, 16th, something like that, around Greater Detroit. You can check my calendar at LarryNemechek.com. And then I'm going to be in Mishawak, Wisconsin for Sputnik Fest this fall, along with Northeast Trek Con in Albany, which is their second one. First one was 2 years ago. So that whole region of the country, there's not a big New York dedicated licensed truck convention this year. So I hope everybody in that region comes up and sees us. A lot of guests are planned for that. But then closer to home, I'm, you know, building Portal 47, and the Trek Files is on hiatus, my podcast diving into Gene's files that we do with Roddenberry. But we'll be back in about 3 weeks.
I thought we agreed to refer that as rummaging through Gene's drawers, Larry.
Yes. I was getting to the tagline. And so I've got some Portal 47 specials this week. And we're also launching a kind of a rebranded version of my own tours, Trekland Tours, the day tours around LA film sites. Also, the big tour that I lead with Terrace Cassidy, the Geek Nation Tours, is going to be in 20. We skipped this year. We broke our every 2 years habit, but it will be back next year. And I'm going to be promoting that at Vegas too and getting the word out there. So we're launching that as well. That's for next year. And in the meantime, I'm going to have some day tours and hopefully have some live Trek events in LA that will be live streamed for everybody around the world. So I'm working on some big projects here to launch. But again, narrow casting for all of our Trek faithful. But hopefully some, you know, as we do at Trekland, as you like to do too, getting the voices of those people that have not been heard out there in a fun way. Yeah. And getting more folks around LA and some of the film sites as things go by. There's going to come a point we'll have to do a tour around Toronto, I guess. But for right now, there's plenty to do around here. So yeah, LarryNemechek.com, at Larry Nemechek on Twitter. Oh, and every Tuesday, Trekland Tuesdays live at 1 p.m. Pacific on my Facebook, Larry Nemechek Trekland.
Soon to be nominated for an Emmy Award.
As soon as they can invent the category.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, if you would like to contact me, I'm not doing that much these days. listeners, anyone who follows me on social media knows that I've been dealing with my eye issue for the past almost 2 years now, unfortunately. A quick update for anyone wondering.
Yes.
I may be coming out of the woods. I think I had an exam at the beginning of this week as we're recording, and I did not have any new retinal detachments. It's 6 weeks after the most recent surgery, so that's the longest I've ever gone. I did suffer retinal edema, which is like a buildup of fluid in the retina that sometimes happens after surgery, so I still can't see very well. But that seems to be getting better, so hopefully things look positive, and eventually I will get back to podcasting on a more regular basis. That is my goal. But if you would like to follow me and talk to me anyway, you can find me on social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my name on Twitter, on Facebook, pretty much everywhere in social media. I do have my writing about Star Trek, which you can find on the official website at StarTrek.com. If you search for my name, C. Brian Jones. And also, if you're interested in reading some of the other stuff that I write that's not related to Star Trek, I did finally just put up a website of my professional work. And that's at cbrianjones.pro, so P-R-O at the end, cbrianjones.pro. And I do have a lot of the articles that I write for my magazine up there, if you're curious. And otherwise, you can catch me on The Orb with Matthew Rushing. We are doing some new episodes now, although a bit of time passes between each. And I have some other things in the works, which I hope to get out to people sometime in the coming months. And if you'd like to share your thoughts on the show, if you'd like to contact the network, you can do that by going to trek.fm/contact, use the form there, choose to send to a show, and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to me by email. You can also follow the network on Twitter at TrekFM. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/TrekFM, and then we have the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group. If you're not already a member, I do encourage you to go over there and join in. Every episode that we publish gets its own post, and there's discussion from listeners and other hosts there. Also, just general discussion about Star Trek. It's a really nice place. We have well over 3,000, I don't know, maybe 3,500 members there right now. It's a closed group, so you do need to click join. You need to answer two questions to make sure that you are a listener, because we don't want just everybody to wander in, because we try to keep that group different from other Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. We try to have respectful discussions, meaningful discussions there. So check that out on Facebook, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right on up. But if it doesn't, just type the Babel Conference, and you'll find it. I'd also like to thank my associate producers here on The Ready Room, Zachary Fruling, Renee Roberts, Sam Piasek, Kay Elizabeth Shaw, Tim Robertson, David Shuford, and Ju Kim. Thank you so much for your support of the show and for sticking with me and for supporting the network. And if you're listening out there and you would like to help us keep this show and all of our shows going, you can become a patron of the network at patreon.com. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. We have various perks for you, including early access to some episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. We have a special website called Patron Zone, which is where you can get all of those early releases and such. It really does take a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute our podcasts, and we really appreciate any support you can give us. And we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details of that at patreon.com/trekfm. Well, Larry, I think we should try not to wait so long to get together in the Ready Room again next time. I had a lot of fun talking to you today, even if you did plaster the wall with Portal 47 banners and stuff back there.
Look, portal47.net, I should say. If you're gonna make fun of the banner, at least read it right.
Larry, I've been having a lot of eye surgery. I told you I can't see very
well. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I am so sorry. You're right. I guess that's also why you didn't notice me sleeping on the couch for 3 or 4 months. So next time, I was going to say, exactly. Poke me sooner next time, and maybe
see to the left right now, so I was just passing right by you. I didn't even know you were there.
Oh, okay. No, it's good. It was too long. I try to do a lot more behind a mic and on camera these days, but nothing replaces the time we sit down and get to hash out what's going on in Trekland. So thanks for having me back on again, Chris. Oh, and you know what? I never mention the official Star Trek magazine, Chris. My column has been there for 20 years. I just did, aside from my column, I just did a huge interview today with Rick Berman about Maury Hurley, whose first name, number one, is actually pronounced Morris and not Maurice, the way we've all been saying it for all these years.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Plenty more nuggets about him and about the first couple of years, Next Generation. But that's in Dead Tree Media, also digital, official Star Trek magazine from Titan. So, yes.
I need to go look and see if there's a company called Dead Tree Media, because if there's not, I think I need to start one.
But you can only print on paper. That's the trick. You can only...
Well, Larry, I am a print magazine editor, so...
Okay, so just feed me my 10% on the name, and that's all, and we'll be even.
Yeah, forever. You get residuals forever on Dead Tree Media.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We just got our residuals check for Prophecy. I think I put it on Instagram.
Oh, really?
It was like
$6
$8 since the last time or something. So, and that's split with Janet. So,
I see. Well, Larry, I think I'm going to go watch Star Trek 2009 now, because even though it's 2018. I just realized that it's just a movie.
You do that, Chris. You do that. Meanwhile, I think it's time to stick yet another executive producer in it, because the Ready Room is done.